Together the House Resources Committee at 8:05. First item of business is to correct a problem we had on House Bill 342 when last we met. We have before us a new version K, and actually what we're going to have to do, and I'm going to read this because we have gotten ourselves in problem on a count on an amendment which was very instrumental in passing the bill out of committee. So we've gone to our legal advisor to redo what we did wrong in an erroneous count. We thought we had 5 do pass. We actually found out we only had 4 do pass and 4 do not pass. So the motion should have failed, and therefore we couldn't do what we did. So for the record, I'm going to read this so that we don't make another mistake. You've all heard of remedial reading. Have any of us heard of remedial counting? At any rate, during our last meeting, we considered and reported out of committee House Bill 342, an act relating to water quality. Under debate on that bill, we considered Amendment Number 6, which added the words, when site-specific information is reasonably known or available, to page 2, line 14. We voted on it, the vote was announced, and I stated that Amendment Number 6 had passed. Unfortunately, upon further review, I have learned that the vote was not sufficient to carry that amendment. So what I would like to do is this. We will rescind our action on reporting the bill out of committee, then the bill will be back before us. Then I would like to adopt the new CS version K dated 4/18/96, which you all have. This CS incorporates all of the other amendments we adopted. Then I would like to consider amendment number 1, which adds the words, when site-specific information is reasonably known or available, which would be added at the end of paragraph beginning on page 2, line 16. So with that, I do have a motion to rescind our action in reporting out House Bill 342, and a motion to adopt the new CS version K, and a motion to adopt amendment number 1, and that last motion would be the one that we may or may not want to pass. So if I could have a motion to rescind our action of last Wednesday on House Bill 342.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
It has been moved to rescind our action. Is there any objection?
I object for discussion.
What is your objection?
Okay, I'm not, you know, this all happened so fast here. The new amendment number 1 was amendment number 6?
That's right. But right now we're trying to rescind our action.
All right.
And the reason for that is there, do you understand that?
Yeah, I understand
okay.
that.
So we need to rescind our action to bring the bill back before us. It was passed out of committee under false pretenses. So there has been a motion to rescind our action reporting House Bill 342 out of committee. Is there objection to rescinding our action?
Objection.
The objection has been removed. Now I would entertain a motion to adopt the new CS K version, which incorporates all of the other amendments that we did correctly pass without the amendment number 6, which we will take up in a moment.
So moved.
It has been moved to adopt version K as our work draft. Is there objection? Now is where we should have been when we adjourned. Now I would put before you again the same motion that we had before, and you have a copy of actually 3 amendments, but amendment number 1, which is the same as old amendment number 6. And you should have a copy of those right there. And now we are, I'm sorry, yes, Representative Davies.
Let's have something with the amendment.
Okay. While we're all getting a copy of the amendment, all members of the committee are present with the exception of Representative Barnes. Okay. And I'll object for the purposes of discussion. So now we are where we were when we made the mistake. So before you now is the proposed addition to the K draft. On page 2, line 16, the underline, when site-specific information is reasonably known or available. Is there discussion? Representative Davies.
Chair, one minor thing. I think we had agreed, if we were going to adopt this, that we would adopt it at the end of the sentence on line 18.
Yes, and I think that it mentions that at the end of paragraph 4.
It's referenced all at the end of the paragraph. Okay, but anyway, just to make that
yes.
clear. And the other point I think that for clarity that should be added, that was also part of the confusion, is that this amendment was critical in the fiscal note issue, and that the department had testified that if we adopted this amendment, that it would reduce significantly their workload and would allow a zero fiscal note. Without this, the department could not support a zero fiscal note.
That's very good, and I appreciate that being entered in the record because that is absolutely correct.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Ogden.
Also note that the bill sponsor is not here. Is he aware of this action today? Or?
He was notified. I don't know whether he or I don't see his staff member either.
All right.
Okay.
For the record, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Ogden.
I recall the bill sponsor testified that if this amendment was passed, it basically gutted the bill.
He did so testify, yes.
I'd like to see the minutes from the last meeting.
Mr. Chairman? Yes.
This is Janice in
the
RDEC. I need to
butt
in, but it's
kind
of tough on the telephone to wait your arm.
Yes. Janice, please proceed.
I did have a chance to talk with Representative Roseberg, and I don't want to indicate that he removed his objection to this, but I do believe that there was some confusion about the effect of this amendment, and if I might be allowed to speak to what the amendment would do. The purpose of it is to ensure that DEC does not have to go out and create information about the natural condition of the water body. What it's intended to do is say, when it's reasonably available or known, we'll use it. Otherwise, we don't have to consider it. So it's intended to be a time and cost savings amendment, something that we probably read into it in the first place, but was pointed out by Petition Game, they didn't read it that way, and because of that, in differing interpretations, we thought it was very prudent to make the, to make it clear.
Janice, if a situation came up, then we're talking about Stream X that you don't have background information on, and Company A wants to do whatever. What would be the situation then? Would you then be required to go get that data, and would that be part of the application cost? Let's assume that that's in there for the moment.
Okay, assuming the amendment's in there, no. If it's not reasonably known or available, if nobody's got any information about it, then we would not be required to go out and try to gather it or with the permittee.
What would be the regulation, or what would be the permit stipulations then on the discharge?
Well, you probably just exceeded my knowledge of how the water quality permit works. I would suspect that there would be some, we would look at what we did know, because we probably would know something. And we would look at what we did know and use that as the basis. I don't think there are too many instances where we know absolutely nothing.
I see. I think the sponsor was here a moment ago and left again, but I think one of his concerns would be that by not knowing that a permit request could be held up for some time in trying to secure the information, that's not what I'm hearing you say.
Well, that was his concern, and we feel like this amendment takes care of that concern rather than the other way around. We, too, would not want to hold up the permit while we try to gather up information. That can be costly. It can be time-consuming. It may not be necessary to do. So this says that only when it's reasonably known or available will require the discharge water to be to meet that natural condition.
I see. Okay.
So we think this amendment does what the sponsor wanted to. I just think there was confusion about it because it did happen so quickly.
Yes, I think you're right, and there was some confusion. Are there any other questions from Ms. Adair? We also have Marilyn Crockett online. Marilyn, is that your understanding as well?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chairman. The heart of the matter in paragraph 4 is the term natural condition. And one would expect that if you had information that indicated that the natural condition of the water pipe, let's say, was extremely filthy, then you would be able to get an exception, if you will, from the water quality regulations or the standards for that suspended sediment condition. If you didn't have that information, whether the applicant didn't have it or DEC or no one had it, then you would be held then to what the water quality standards say. So this is pretty straightforward, I believe.
I see. Representative Ogden, did you have a...
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Adair?
Yes.
If a company was interested in doing some work on a particular river or something, or stream, and is there some kind of modality for them to bring in a water sample or have this water tested so it could be known what the quality is before they start the work? And
there is that ability, yes. I don't know that, I'm trying to think of it there. We would test the water before the discharge, but we would have an indication of what the water quality was. We'd look at what their discharge was expected to be. And as Marilyn said, if we didn't have any information about the natural condition of the water body, then we would use just the regular water quality standards for the discharge.
So that, this is Representative Green again, so that to reiterate, if there was a silty condition and you had no information on that, you would go to the normal requirements. But if the applicant came in with a sample of the siltiness, then you would perhaps be able to modify your requirements or the stipulations on the permit to adjust it to that quality of water.
Correct.
Okay. Are there any other questions of either of these people on teleconference? We have the sponsor of the bill, Representative Rochberg. We have rescinded our prior action because of an error in the vote count, and we're now discussing what I hope is in front of you as Amendment Number 1. This was the old Amendment Number 6 on which the passing of the bill out of committee was predicated. And at that time, you may recall that with this amendment added, DEC felt that there would be a significant reduction in the fiscal note. Without it, there would be a significant requirement of them for getting information. And what we've just gone through is a situation, I think, that should be satisfactory to you, that they will not be holding up permits in areas where they may not have information, but the applicant certainly can bring in samples of the discharge, what would be the receiving waters, so that if that is in poorer condition than what would normally be the discharge requirements, they would adjust the permit accordingly. I believe that's a reasonable assumption, digest of what we've heard so far.
The Chairman, I'm fully aware of the situation, and given the fact that if these will yield the zero fiscal notes, I'm amenable to it.
Is there any other question of any member of the
committee? That is to say, not significantly reduced.
Representative Rochberg?
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. You said what?
You know, if in fact they're not significantly reduced, but zero fiscal notes. That was my understanding.
I haven't heard anything from DEC, so I don't know whether that's... Is that your understanding, Janice?
It was zero out both our fiscal note and fishing gains. That's correct.
Very good. Any other comments? Is there a motion to accept Amendment Number 1?
It's already on the table.
Required?
It's on the table.
Okay. Is there objection to Amendment Number 1, having heard the testimony?
I believe I did, or somebody did.
Mr. Chair,
I will remove the objection. Is there any other objection? Hearing none, Amendment Number 1 is passed. We have two other amendments. As I understand it, these amendments are from ADEC and have been reviewed by AOCA and are satisfactory. Has the sponsor had a chance to review Amendments 2 and 3?
Mr. Chairman, just to avoid some confusion, I brought some amendments which are conforming, and I see there's other ones that were here too. The ones where I say by DEC and AOCA are the ones and then I have a third one here. It's just a conforming amendment. I don't know if these have been numbered by our staff. Or
I've never seen them.
We have.
We just handed these to you, Jeff.
Behind the back.
Oh, you did?
What we're calling 2 and 3, which apparently is your first page. Is that?
Pardon me?
We have amendments 2 and 3 before you. Are they what you have alluded to as your long, full page amendment?
You know, these sit there on the same subjects, Mr. Chairman, but they're not drafted in the format. Mine go a little bit further. I prefer this committee act on the amendments I provided your staff. I'll be happy to explain that to you when they're distributed.
We'll stand at ease while the amendments by the sponsor are being reproduced.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask that they be faxed up here?
Absolutely.
My fax number is 269-7654.
Thank you. They will be on the way.
Mr. Chairman, if you want to come back, I can talk about the amendments. Well, if you will.
We don't know what
okay,
they look like.
That's, you're right. Yeah, so just
unless they're essentially what we have.
Well,
before.
They are, basically. That's matter of fact, amendment.
But they're somewhat different wording.
Yeah.
Representative Davies,
we're
at ease.
We're at ease.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We could establish that there is that
the idea.
That these are supported by DC. And
they are.
But we haven't done that on the record yet.
Well, yes, I did. When I introduced them, I said
that
they were.
That. We haven't heard from Maryland.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying we could just get
We're back on the record then. I had mentioned that what we have as amendments 2 and 3 before us were prepared by DEC and are approved or agreeable to the AOGA. Is that correct, Marilyn?
No, I know.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay, we're now having the sponsor's amendments distributed. Representative Roquebert.
Mr. Chairman, the one that's, I don't know if we have a number yet, that says by DEC and AOGA is actually the same as amendment number 3 you distributed, except it has some conforming language down below. But also, it goes on my amendment to delete the provisions on page 3. It's on page 3 about the public hearing and 30-day notification situation, or the public hearing process, that's right.
One, two,
if you recall at the last meeting, Mr. Chairman, and I'll refer you to the bottom of this amendment where it says page 3, lines 1 and 2,
mm-hmm.
and page 3, line 3.
I'm totally confused.
Yeah,
all right. We're now looking at amendment. It's not numbered. We'll call it amendment number 2. It's the one that was just handed out by Representative Roquebert. It starts off with offered in House Resources Committee by DEC and AOGA. We'll call that number 2. It looks like this.
We'll call it new number 2 or something like that.
It's what?
New number 2 or something.
Well, we haven't looked at those others yet. They would have to be renumbered. They have not been offered.
You referred to these.
I referred to them, but they were not offered as amendments.
Well, that's true, but it's just going to be confusing. In the
I understand. That's why I'm suggesting that we are now looking at this full page, and that is amendment number 2. And Representative Roquebert was talking about eliminating the first 3 lines on page 3. The first part of it, the first half of the page, is essentially what has been agreed to between AOGA and DEC. The last part of the page is what Representative Roquebert is now proposing that has not been reviewed. And Marilyn and Janice, have you received the 2 amendments by the sponsor?
I have not. Chairman, I have not.
Okay. What, Representative Roquebert, would you, while that's in transmission, would you explain the last part of the page there, page 2, line 7 and page 3?
Yes, page 2, line 7. Uh-oh.
Now, that may be changed because we have adopted a new version, so you may
that's
have to
right.
adjust.
That's right. Okay. No, that's the little 4 after the, because we're renumbering. That's just a renumbering of that one because we are changing below here the special regulations and renumbering. So that state, and the heart of this one, Mr. Chairman, is the page 3. It will become clear after I start
okay.
on page 3 there. Page 3, lines 1 and 2, you delete all of those materials. This is the department testified at the last hearing that the public hearing and the 30-day notice were not in conformance with the Administrative Procedures Act, so we're just striking that out and reinserting 1 or 2. Mr. Chairman, I draw your attention to their amendment number 2.
Just
they were
a
trying
moment.
To
just,
do that.
Just a moment,
bit, so.
Representative Roquebert.
Right.
You've eliminated with the first one lines 1 and 2 and then
inserted 1 where 2 is.
On line 3, So this would actually be on line two of our version, that where one is, you've inserted.
No, I'm working off version K.
Okay. I don't...
I got it.
Page three, line three, insert one at the front of the line?
Yeah, well, instead of two, should have said delete two and insert one.
You don't need to do that when you've got a renumber below
right.
that.
Right.
You can just get rid of that altogether.
Just, you could have said just renumber, right.
Yeah, I think that would be a lot less confusing.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
So the page three, line three insert should just not...
That shouldn't be there.
And then the reference in line two above is just a renumbering also.
I think after delete all material and renumber. Everybody have that then? So we're going to strike the page three, line three insert and just after delete all material and renumber accordingly. All right, Representative Rochberg, you were discussing why you wanted the first two lines deleted and...
Go again.
Okay, would you please repeat
Mr. Chairman, that was the testimony from the department indicating there was a problem with the public hearing procedure stipulated in our version of the bill. It was inconsistent with the Administrative Procedures Act. And that's why we've stricken that. Therefore, the normal procedure for adoption regulation under the Act is to be carried out. That's all.
Marilyn and Janice, are you hearing us all right? We're getting a little feedback here. I don't know whether you're picking us up all right or not.
Mr. Chairman, I'm hearing you loud and clear, and if I followed you correctly, I think that this is the same amendment that Marilyn and I had talked about, and the amendment on page 2, line 7, would simply be a conforming amendment that we overlooked.
Okay.
Marilyn, I agree.
So is there any problem with amendment number 2 as revised? Representative Davies?
Are they understanding the deletion at the top of page 3?
That's their amendment. Looking at the bill, my understanding is that on page 3, lines 1 and 2, which coincidentally are subsections 1 and 2, are eliminated. Line 3 becomes a new subsection 1, beginning make available to the public, and then the rest of the sections renumbered.
Oh, I think, though, yes. And there is something that you may not have seen, and Representative Davies properly brought to our attention. The top part of that page, amendment number 2, deletes promptly, but no later than 12 months after the effective date of, on page 2, line 2, after regulations.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Marilyn. I guess I'm thinking that that's a separate amendment from this one.
It's just offered as together.
Yeah, it's all part of this same amendment. If you want to split it, we certainly can.
Oh, no, I don't need to complicate the process. I'm just concentrating on what we're doing here on page 3 to make sure that I understand that
And as well that you do, I think there is general confusion among everybody.
Maybe.
Representative Long.
Yeah, can I add to the confusion, please?
Please do.
Okay. According to my interpretation of deleting all material on page 3, line 1 and 2, should that read line 1, 2, 4?
No.
Or you just want to...
What will end up happening is where it says make available on line 3.
Oh, you're going to make that a 1.
That would be a 1.
Where it starts make available.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And then 3 and 4 would become 2 and 3. And 3 then is a change over on the earlier page where Representative Rochberg said on line 7, page 2, we have a 4 in there. That now has to be a 3.
Okay, that clears up my confusion.
Yes, Janice?
I almost hate to do this, but on page 3, and I'm looking at the resources work draft, that same conforming amendment needs to be made on line 23 and on line 24.
I have another amendment for that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's
okay, so as far as it goes, is there any objection to amended or modified amendment number 2? Yes, Representative?
This amendment hasn't even been offered yet.
Good point.
Mr. Chairman, on the floor. All we're doing is discussing it. It has not been.
That's a very good point.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move amendment number 2.
Amendment number 2 has been offered as revised?
Yeah, that's correct.
Again.
Okay. We want to make sure we do it right this time.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Ogun.
I'm not sure we've thoroughly discussed page 2, line 2, the top part. I recall a testimony that DEC that they had problems with promptly but no later than 12 months because they said sometimes these federal mandates are unfunded mandates, by the way, are sometimes it takes longer than 12 months, and I want to make sure they're comfortable with the language that
Representative, what we're deleting that.
No,
that's what it says.
Right, we're deleting that. We're changing it to 90 days,
mm-hmm.
or another date mutually agreed upon by the applicant and the department. And let's say the applicant says, "No, I want it." Department says, "Oh, it's going to take 2 years because of the, you know, the federal mandate." And the applicant says, "No, that's too long. They don't have an agreement." And where are they?
90 days.
Mm-hmm.
90 days. Well, that's impossible because it takes longer. I mean, I just like the department to comment on that.
We heard
DEC
say that they accepted it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, it's their amendment, and it's what it's done is to prompt the department to, it sets a deadline if somebody requests it, but it says by another date mutually agreeable.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment actually works better for us because we now don't necessarily have to track all the minor amendments that EPA might make. And the applicants can help us find those things. As you've seen federal registers, they have a plethora of information in them.
Thank you. Any other comments, Representative Ogun? Any other discussion on amendment number 2 as modified? Any objections? Amendment number 2 is adopted. And that takes care of effectively two. Now, you had another amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, is amendment number 3, which is really a conforming amendment with one addition of one word. It says it relates to page 2, line 9, where after criterion as regulations, then the balance of them are conforming numbering. I think we call that amendment number 3.
That would be amendment number 3, and this would be offered in the House by Representative Rothberg. It's a series of deletes and inserts to become a conforming amendment.
And, Mr. Chairman, I point out on line 9 of page 2, it adds after federal water criteria or regulations. It adds the words or regulations.
And we
can hear from the department on this.
Yeah. Beg pardon?
Can we hear from the department?
Yes. Janice, do you have any problem with amendment number 3? Have you received it yet?
I have, and I'm just now reading. I don't see that should pose any problem.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I point out that on page 2, line 2, the term which we've used within the statute of federal water quality criteria or regulation.
Could you speak up, sir? We're you're mumbling, and we can't pick you up.
I'm getting the feedback, so I'm sounding too loud.
Uh-huh.
If you'll notice on page 2, line 2, federal water quality criteria or regulations is stated there, so we're being consistent there, and this allows the department to look at their own regulations.
And it does what, sir?
Allows the department to look at their own regulations.
Oh. Representative Davies?
Mr. Chair, the first conforming thing we already did, so we could strike that one.
Uh-huh.
Line 7 after B is already done. So I would.
That's correct.
Right. That's actually the second piece of this.
Right.
the rest of it. True.
No, we have not.
I would move amendment number 3.
There has been a motion to adopt amendment number 3 as modified. Is there objection?
Just yes. So everybody understands, the only the only thing in amendment number 3 now is page 2, line 9.
No.
We struck the second part, but the others are conforming.
The page 3 conforming we need.
That's because of the numbering sequence. We're just changing 4 to 3 because we don't have a 4 anymore.
Why are you striking page 2, line 7?
We did that in the previous.
That's already been done.
My mistake. It was done before.
Okay. I don't want there to be any questions now. That's just redundant, in effect. So it's no problem. It's just that it doesn't need to be there. And so what we have is page 2, line 9, page 3, line 23, and page 3, line 24, which do need to be there just in a conforming fashion because we no longer have paren 4. Is there any question or any other comments to be made? Is there objection to amendment number 3 as revised? Hearing none, that is adopted. And now we have a draft K as amended.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Davies?
I'd just like to go back to these other, the old amendment number 2, or whatever you want to call this thing.
From the department?
Yeah. And there was, I'm just trying to see if it had an insert following the process. And I just haven't even had a chance to see if that makes any sense at this point.
They're identical.
Are they identical?
Okay. Just reworded ones, or actually.
Line 6, did you say?
Yes, on page 2, line 6.
Oh, 2, I'm sorry.
Public hearing required.
Yes.
Under the 4603087. And of course, we don't have a public hearing required anymore. I appreciate Representative Davies bringing that up. And that was the purpose of our second part of our amendment, whatever the number is. I've kind of lost track of numbers.
No, you're right, and I think that's the point Representative Osterman was making. My point, I was lost. I was looking in page 3, the wrong page.
Yeah, 2, that's why I asked.
It is on page 2.
But I believe, yeah, it should be a page 2, line 6 reference here. And it seems like then what it would say is delete after the public hearing required, because we've deleted the public hearing. And the suggestion would be to insert following the process. So if following the process required under Alaska statutes, blah, 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 then we would. So I think I would move that amendment, Mr. Chair.
Does everyone understand where we are now? We're on page 2, line 6, and we're at the bottom part of what now would be amendment number 4.
Okay. It would just, amendment number 4 would just be that one.
Bottom part there.
Piece.
It would be below that make available to the public, it would be that conforming amendment.
Right. I have no objection, Mr. Chairman.
Do the members of the committee understand, or do they have any comments or questions or objections to the addition of following the process where we have deleted after the public hearing required on line 6? It would be number 4. Is there objection to the amendment? Hearing none, that is adopted. Now, their old number 3 is already incorporated. Are there other amendments proposed?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Davies.
I would move to zero both fiscal notes or all fiscal notes.
There has been a motion and agreed to by the department that the fiscal notes would read 0 as this bill leaves this committee. Is there objection to that? Hearing none, we will modify those to 0 fiscal notes. What is the wish of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ogun.
I would like to move CS for House Bill number 342, Resources, as amended, with 0 fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
And never to darken our door again?
Yes. Indeed.
You have my promise.
Is there objection to moving the bill from committee with 0 fiscal notes? Hearing none? Dale is moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Did you say that? Did you say that Sarah wanted to find out this one? Shoot.
So I think it was just 9:30, so she would ask that she can go first.
Okay.
Can you take that over here?
That brings us to the confirmation hearings of the members of the Board of Game, and there is no particular order, but we have had a request from Ann Ruggles if she could be heard first because she has a commitment at 9:30. So if there's no objection, we will take up the confirmation hearing of Ann Ruggles first. Ann, are you online?
Yes, sir, I am. Thank you.
Would you please give us why you think we should confirm you to the Board of Game?
Thank you, sir. My name is Ann Ruggles, and my interest in serving on the Board of Game is that I have had 3 years' experience now. I have learned a tremendous amount, both in working with the department, the public, as well as with other board members. I feel I do bring some experience to this. I also represent a point of view that has perhaps not always been represented on the board, point of view expressed by many hunters as well as many non-hunters. My primary interest is that I am interested in wildlife in the state, and I am interested in serving the state in this capacity.
Other questions? Is that the all you wish to say and then just answer questions, Ann?
I'm here to answer any questions you may have.
Are there any questions of Ms. Ruggles from members of the committee? Those of that are left. Yes, Representative Cott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ann, this is Representative Cott. Can you just comment on your experience or your expertise in the area of hunting, i.e., do you, in fact, have you been a hunter yourself? What types of hunts have you participated in, and how long have you been at it?
Throughout my life, I have hunted with family members and with friends. We currently do that. I have since I've been a little kid. If you want any more than what species I've hunted, you want to know what species I've been out on, what species.
Well, if you could just briefly comment on whether or not you've been involved in some of the big game hunts.
Yes, sir. Ungulate hunts up here. Ungulate hunts in various places in the lower 48.
Do I take that then what you've said is you've been involved in hunting caribou or moose?
We've been out on moose hunts. We've been out on caribou hunts.
As a licensed tag holder?
No, my husband and I do not consume enough meat for it to be, as we felt, a proper thing for us to take an animal for ourselves. So we go out with friends. We share in all the work, packing stuff out, and then we get part of the meat in return when we get home.
Thank you.
Now, we have several people on teleconference that wish to testify on the committee confirmation hearings. What I would like to do, I think, to prevent going back and forth is to have all three nominees give their talk, and we would ask questions from the board and then go to teleconference so that as you testify, you can comment on any or all three of the applicants. So are there any other questions that, yes, Representative Davies?
Thank you. Ann, this is Representative John Davies. Could you give us a quick summary of your views of when it's appropriate to use intensive game management?
Yes, sir. I think if we have the scientific information to begin with to indicate to us that this is an area that is appropriate from the standpoint of both ungulate populations that are there and their potential to increase if necessary, impact of the various predator populations on that ungulate population that happens to be there, and the capacity of habitat to support whatever the objectives are, and there is public support for carrying out those activities in that area. This is certainly a legitimate tool to use, a legitimate goal to have. It is something that the Board of Game has done in a variety of areas through the years. It's not something that is appropriate in all places of the state at all times. There are a number of areas that physically cannot support high levels of ungulate populations for a variety of reasons, but there are other places they can and where the desire exists for that to happen and the science exists for us to be able to carry it out.
Representative Davies.
Anna, have you supported the use of intensive game management while you've been on the board?
Yes, sir, I have. In a number of places, most recently at our most recent meeting, 19D. And as I say, through the 3 years that I have been on the board, we also, at our most recent meeting down in Juneau, we put another regulation in place relating to intensive management down in 20A, and that we have been able to approve a cow moose hunt now because we have sufficient moose there, that this is an appropriate item to carry out.
Any other questions? Ann, there were several questions and comments made concerning your appointment in the State Affairs Review. Would you care to comment on any of those, as I would anticipate we may hear some more of those in this committee?
I'm not sure how to, but that's a terribly general question. I guess, let me say this. There are going to be people who will oppose probably all of us, probably anybody who's ever been appointed to the Board of Game, and there will be plenty of people who support all the members. I think it should be the goal of the administration and the legislature to put together a Board of Game that is reflective of all of the peoples, all of the values that exist in Alaska, not to try to craft a very narrow-viewed Board of Game. And the reason I think this is important is that as long as we are able to say that we represent a wide variety of values on that Board of Game, we are representing most of the people in the state, and they have no reason to work outside of the board process to try to influence wildlife policy. If we try to craft a board that is very narrow in its scope and very narrow in the values which it represents, I think what we will have done will be to send a message to people who may have a set of values, a set of experiences that are different than those represented by that narrow scope. They need to find some other process by which to influence policy, whether that's public relations campaigns, whether it's initiatives, or any number of things that other people can turn to. I would like to see this board, and as it's configured right now, I think, quite frankly, looking at what we did in March and what we just did the last couple of days, I think we do have fairly broad representation of values on that board. I don't see reason for people to try to work outside of the board process.
If this were to go forward, obviously, and that you would be confirmed, then what would be your attitude if it became a matter of public interest that the comments that have been made would represent the majority of the people? Would your attitude be swayed by that, or would you maintain the attitudes that have caused the comments to have been made? That's a very difficult question. It's probably worded poorly, but I hope you understand what I'm trying to drive at.
I think I know where you're getting, and you're right. It is fairly subjective. Probably the most difficult part about it is it's very subjective. I don't know that the attitudes that I heard expressed by some of the folks at that last confirmation meeting specific interest, or they were alerted by a mailing or whatever. They were motivated to call in, to write in, to be able to say, without, I guess, taking a straw poll of everybody in the state, how do we determine what is the attitude of the majority of the people of the state?
That's a very good answer to a very difficult question. Thank you. Are there any other questions that anybody from the committee would like to ask?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Hogan.
Thank you, Ms. Ruggles. What is your opinion of the federal management of fish and wildlife in the state of Alaska?
We could go on for a long time.
Are you in favor of it or are you against it?
I don't think it works for a wide variety of reasons. I don't think it works. The most promising thing I've seen on the horizon to try to resolve the issue has been the Lieutenant Governor's attempts at trying to come up with a solution. It's the most promising thing that I see in front of us right now. It is trying to work with all the people. I can't imagine there's anybody who thinks that having dual management, double sets of regulations, overlapping sets of advisory boards and regulatory boards, is going to either help the people in the state of Alaska or wildlife populations in the state of Alaska.
Representative Hogan.
Are you aware that there's federal regulations that are currently being considered that would essentially almost possibly eliminate the management of state management of fish and wildlife if populations of animals, for example, that are hunted for subsistence in a federal area happen to migrate or somehow be affected in private lands and state lands, that the federal government's considering managing those as well?
Yes, sir. I've read the same report. I think that the report to which you are alluding, we've had lawsuits that have
this, and I think we're going
to continue to see it until we can, between the state and the federal
government, craft a solution. I think the solution needs to start here in the state.
Thank you.
Representative Williams?
Yes, Ms. Ruggles, you've been on there for how long now on the board?
3 years.
Okay. A couple of years ago, we passed this intensive game management bill and then put it into effect. How do you see that working, or do you think that piece of legislation was any good at all?
It has certainly given the board direction in how it should manage in some areas. It takes a while, as I'm sure you folks are all well aware, once a law is put into place, for the regulatory agencies to figure out how it's going to work, what information they're going to need, how to go ahead and get that information, and what the effects of the implementation of the law are going to be. We're just now beginning to see that. We've got a real steep learning curve. I think we're learning some things as we go, and I think as we go, we'll become more effective at implementing it.
Representative Williams?
I have your resume in front of me. It's not dated. On your first paragraph, you have there in the last sentence, public to devise ways in which humans can exist in the natural world with minimal impact on natural systems. Can you tell me what that says?
Sure. Exactly what the words are. My interest is that we still need to have a board game 100 years from now, that we have not so impacted the systems that we have lost wildlife populations due to habitat conversions and so forth, that there's no longer a reason to have a board game.
Yes, Representative Williams.
Yeah. On number four, the policy.
Well, Mr. Chair.
I am a...
Yes. Excuse me, Representative Davies.
Thank you. Excuse me, Representative Williams, but it's now 9:02, and I would like to move for it to stand in place at ease for 3 minutes to observe 168-second moment of silence for the lives lost and the survivors at Oklahoma.
I think that's entirely appropriate, so we will stand at ease. Thank you, Representative Davies. We will resume now. Representative Williams, you had a question.
Yes, On number four of your policy, that first sentence, I am currently a member of Alaska Board. I am one of seven appointed by the governor to establish the regulations necessary to ensure the conservation of wildlife resources. Could you explain that, please?
Yes, sir. I think it is the primary role of the Board of Game to ensure conservation of wildlife resources, because if we don't do that, there won't be the wildlife resources available for people to hunt, to watch, to trap, and so forth. In order for us to be, particularly if we are interested in intensively managing wildlife to benefit consumptive users, as the intensive management law requires, we've got to make sure that those wildlife populations are there, which means we have to, our primary concern must be conservation.
Okay.
Representative Williams?
Do you see that as just, the way I interpret that, what you've said is that you're going to establish regulations or your primary purpose is to protect the game?
Ms. Ruggles?
People factor play into this?
Well, in order for people to be able to utilize wildlife, the wildlife has to be there to begin with. We can't keep using it in such a way that, or we cannot use wildlife in such a way that we deplete populations and end up with nothing left for people to use. The two go hand in hand. I don't think you can have one without the other.
Okay. Representative Williams?
Yes, and you were... I see also in your professional papers and what have you, tell me how, getting back to the intensive game management, how the wolf would work into this factor. Do you think that because of what you said, just got through saying, that you think the wolf would, you want to save the wolf also?
I'm not sure, I guess, what you mean by the term save. That is a word that has become terribly emotionally charged in society today. The wolf is one of many factors within the wild systems in which we exist, caribou exist, moose exist, all kinds of birds. I mean, wolf is just one of the many factors out there, and it is certainly something that's a part of all of our decision making.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. On that point, Ms. Ruggles, if it came to a point that game were limited, would it be your feeling that man should have a priority over the wolf?
If that was one of the areas where the public and the Board of Game had decided intensive management was to be implemented, then yes. But even within intensive management, it is not the goal in any of the intensive management plans that the Board of Game has implemented to date to eliminate wolf populations or bear populations or any other population anywhere.
I understand that, and I don't know that that was actually where Representative Williams was going, to eliminate wolves. I think probably it was more, as you say, of an intensive game management. There has, as you're well aware, been a hue and cry about doing anything to inhibit the wolf population, and I was just interested in where you stood as far as where wolf stands in the priority in the food chain with man.
If it is determined in an area where the board has said, yes, this is the place we're going to carry out intensive management, and if the biological data that we have from the department indicates that wolves are a limiting factor at that time under those circumstances, then wolf management is certainly called for.
I think,
Mr. Chairman,
that was... skillfully worded, Representative Gogan.
My observations as well, very skillfully worded.
Ms. Ruggles.
What I think you need, probably is necessary to understand, is that we have been told in a number of instances that it's not always, wolves are not, elimination or limiting wolf populations is not always going to get us where we want to go. That it's not a panacea. And I think over my years on the board, I have seen a couple of points of view that have been taken. There is that point of view that says you shouldn't touch a wolf any and I don't think that's very productive. There has been another point of view expressed that says, always, when, no matter what the circumstances, wolves are a problem. And that's also not the case from a scientific point of view. There are instances where the problem may be bears and not wolves, where the problem may be a whole string of bad winters and or bad summers, or maybe limiting habitat that's limiting, which is why I say that it depends on the specific circumstance. If we are given a report, information from the department that indicates that in an area where the Board of Game is interested in carrying out intensive management, wolves are limiting to the particular ungulate population in question, and that limiting wolf populations below what normal hunting and trapping would do would give a boost to that ungulate population, then that's a legitimate thing to do.
So
I don't want to be making blanket statements, I guess, is what I'm trying to come down to.
Representative Ogden,
Mr. Chairman, on that point, Ms. Ruggles, I think what we're trying to get out of you is, do you place a higher priority on consumptive use or wildlife viewing, or a higher priority on, just if you'd answer that question?
My priority depends on how we're managing a particular area. In areas where our priority is to manage for consumptive use, then that's where my priority lies. If it happens to be an area where the priority is to manage for viewing, and there aren't very many places we do that, then that is the appropriate priority. But it depends entirely upon the priority the board has set for any given area.
On that same point, Ms. Ruggles, and I know we have other questions from members of the committee, but on that same point, you indicated earlier that you thought the proposal being circulated by the Lieutenant Governor seems to be, in your estimation, the way to fix this potential dilemma between rural use and urban. Would you, in a hypothetical situation where there is a limited amount of game, maybe even to the point of trying to reduce, well, let's not go that far, in a limited area, that under that preference for rural use, would you then suggest that urban hunters be reduced rather than wolf predation or bear predation or whatever? Representative Davies?
I pass.
Any other questions of Ms. Ruggles? And it looks like we're going to allow you to get out of here by 9:30.
Thank you much. I'm not sure my students appreciate that or not. Give a test.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time and your consideration.
Because of Ms. Ruggles leaving, is there anyone who has a brief comment or two from the audience, of which there are a plethora of people in Fairbanks, Mat-Su, and Anchorage, for Ms. Ruggles specifically, that has not been asked by a member of the committee, so that we can get this on record before Ann has to leave?
I thought you were going to take a testimony.
I was, but because Ann's going to be leaving, she wouldn't be there to respond. Hearing none, then we'll get that all afterwards. The second person up for the board is Victor Van Ballenberg. Victor, can you hear us? Oh, here you are.
I can hear you fine.
Yes, excuse me. Keep my head up, I would be. Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Vic Van Ballenberg, Mr. Chairman. I live in Anchorage, and I appreciate the opportunity to appear before the committee. The question, why do you want to serve on the game board, is one that has been commonly asked of me in the last couple of months. Usually, the person that asks that prefaces it with the statement that requires a lot of time, it's stressful, and no matter what you do, a segment of the public is going to be mad at you. So why do you want to do that? And I have three basic reasons, I guess, for having an interest in wanting to serve on the board. First of all, I feel I'm well qualified professionally and personally. I've been in the state since 1974. Over that 21 or 22 year period, I've had an active interest, and I've been a participant in wildlife issues here in the state. I've worked as a research biologist mostly, both for the Department of Fish and Game and for the U.S. Forest Service. I've done research on moose and wolves, two species of interest to the board and to the public. I've published numerous technical and popular articles on wildlife issues over the years. And I feel professionally well qualified to sit on the board. Above that, I have had a lifelong interest in hunting. I grew up on a farm. I don't think I've missed a single hunting season in the last 40 years, hunting something someplace. Hasn't all been in Alaska. Much of it has been outside of Alaska. I think I have a good feeling for what the hunting public in Alaska desires in the way of wildlife management. I talk to many people that are hunters. I have friends that are hunters. I participate in the activity myself. And I feel I have a good understanding of how hunters view wildlife management in the state. Secondly, I served a previous term on the Board of Game. In 1985, Governor Sheffield appointed me to the board. I served one term, 1985 to 88. I gained a great deal of knowledge and experience as a result of that term. I feel I learned a lot. Quite frankly, if I had to do some things over again, I'd do it. I feel that some of the actions that we took at that time alienated some segments of the public, and some of them remember what happened back then, and some of them are probably going to show up here today, in fact, and tell you about it. But I was a little bit younger then, and I think I've learned over the years that things are not quite as simple as they were then, and like to have another opportunity to serve on the board and address some of those same issues. And I might say that some of the issues that we addressed at that time are still around today, and those relate to wolf management and bear baiting and virtually all the major important issues. We tried to deal with them then, and this board will try to deal with them now. Thirdly, as you all know, the issue of wildlife management in Alaska is contentious these days. There seems to be dissatisfaction among major segments of the public related to wildlife management. And this has created a rift among people interested in wildlife issues. And as a biologist and as a person interested in the issues and as someone who I think can be fair and open-minded and listen to all sides of the issues, I think I can contribute to the board process. I think that we have evidence now from the March board meeting in Fairbanks that the board functions well in its present makeup. I think we did a lot of things for hunters in terms of providing opportunity and providing things that hunters are interested in at that March board meeting. And I think that is evidence that this board, as it's presently constituted, can function well. I don't know if you've all seen it, but I think some of you have a letter from Wayne Reglin, Director of Wildlife Conservation, summarizing things that the board did at the March meeting and emphasizing that the vast majority of it was beneficial to hunters. My own view is a little more optimistic than some regarding wildlife management in the state. I look around the state as a hunter, as a person interested in wildlife issues, and I see lots of bright spots. I see the Nelchina caribou herd, where the board acted to triple the harvest in 1 year and provide a hunting opportunity to many residents of the state. I see other caribou herds at high levels. I see some moose populations that are in trouble, but many others that are not. And so, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for these reasons, I would very much like to serve another term on the board.
Are there questions of the committee for Dr. Umba? Yes, Representative Nicolai.
Vic, you were a state employee at one time working for the Department of Fish and Game. How would you describe your relationship then with the Department of Fish and Game?
Now or then?
Then.
I worked for the department from 1974 till 1980, and my jobs were first of all as a research biologist in the Glen Allen area, doing work on moose and wolves, and then as the statewide fur bearer biologist in Fairbanks, and I then left that position and went to work in my present job as a researcher for the Forest Service. I performed the duties of that job well. My evaluations were good, and I consider it to have been a positive learning experience.
Representative Nicolai.
Just a follow-up question then. Did you leave the Department of Fish and Game with hard feelings towards the department?
No, ma'am. I left the Department of Fish and Game to take a job that I considered more promising than the research potential that I had. As with any employee, I guess there were a few rough spots from time to time, but I certainly bear no ill will toward the department. I have many friends and colleagues in the department who I respect as professional wildlifers.
One question on that. I received a letter and where they described you as that you did everything that you could to obstruct the department's proposals in your previous term.
Oh, I think that's probably a little bit extreme. I think the record is clear. One could go back and resurrect my voting record as a member of the board from 85 to 88, and I believe the record would probably show that on the vast majority of proposals that came from the Department of Fish and Game, I voted in favor of them. There were a few that I opposed and that the board opposed and that did not move forward. But I think it's extreme to say that that I did everything to oppose those proposals. I just simply don't believe that's accurate.
Yeah. Any other questions from the members of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Ogun.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. You were a federal biologist, is that correct?
Correct.
And what was your tenure there? What years?
1980 to present.
So you're presently a federal biologist?
Correct.
You don't see any kind of a conflict being a federal biologist and being on a state board of game?
No, sir, I don't.
Realize you take an oath to defend the Constitution of the state of Alaska when you serve on that?
Already have signed that, yes, sir.
You feel it's a violation of the 10th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and a violation of the statehood compact to have the federal government managing fish and wildlife in the state?
That would be a very complex legal question, I guess, and to be honest with you, not being an attorney, I really don't feel qualified to answer that question.
Mr. Chairman. People that drafted that Constitution weren't attorneys. They were simple men with a basic concept, and I think they drafted it in a way that the average guy can understand. And it's, are you familiar with the 10th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution?
Not entirely, sir. It's been a long time.
Well, I would suggest you read it. It says the powers are not delegated to the states. To the federal governments are retained by the states and the people, and it's clear to me that in light of the statehood compact, which guarantees that the state will manage fish and wildlife, and a compact is like a contract, that the federal government is exceeding the 10th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, violating our statehood compact, and you don't see a conflict with you being a federal biologist.
Oh, no, I don't. As a federal employee sitting on the Board of Game, my opportunities to push any kind of a federal takeover of wildlife would be extremely limited. I mean, even if I wish to do that, which I certainly do not, my strong personal view as not only a federal employee but also a citizen of the state is that the proper management authority of wildlife, resident wildlife in the state, is the state of Alaska. I mean, that's clear. So I think we're probably coming at this from a little bit different angles, because as an individual, I feel qualified and competent and able to sit on the board. And I might add that both the state and my employer have tried to take several significant steps to minimize any conflict of interest situation here. And for example, when I'm at board meetings, I'm on leave. I am not acting as a federal employee there in any capacity. And there are other steps.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Dr. Van Valenberg, we kind of hit around the issue. We asked Ann Ruggles, and I'm going to ask you, that the lieutenant governor of this state has been circulating various drafts of a compromise because of the longstanding conflict between who might ultimately be the best manager of our game, especially as it applies to the federal portion of our state, federal ownership. Did I misunderstand your answer to Representative Ogun that you are in favor of state management, or are you strictly talking about state land as opposed to federal land?
No, sir. I am talking about management of all resident wildlife within the state of Alaska, no matter where it occurs.
Any other questions? Representative Davies.
I'd like to ask the same question I asked Ann of you, and that is, could you give us a little more expansive answer to your view of the appropriateness of the use of intensive game management?
I believe that, you know, with regard to any of these larger issues that come before the Board of Game, whether it be subsistence management or intensive management or whatever, that the Board of Game's function is to do the best it can to implement regulations which carry out the statutes and the court decisions that are important in these large issues. And to the degree that the legislature has passed intensive management legislation, I certainly believe that the board needs to carry out the full intent and spirit of that legislation. Certainly there are areas around the state in which the board has already acted in terms of designating them as intensive management areas, and one of those is the Nelchina Basin Game Management Unit 13, where I previously worked and I've had a long-term interest. And my view as a game board member is that we need to do what it takes to carry out that legislation, and we will proceed to do that, I am sure.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Yes, Representative Long.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. You made a statement earlier that you know, some of your decisions may have alienated some organizations and may have to correct those on this viewpoint. Does that mean that you're swinging over to one side or another?
Well, we all, I think, change our views over time. At least I certainly have. And as I indicated, you know, we took some actions, and I took some actions as a board member 10 years ago that if I had to do it over again, I would have done a little differently. And those actions, in some cases, alienated some people. And I just don't think that it was in some cases the proper way to go about that. And having learned from that experience and having had 10 additional years to think about it and to see how times have changed, yes, my views have changed.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Ogun.
I'd like to maybe follow up a little bit on the conflicts that you said that the state and feds have taken a significant measure to avoid conflicts of interest?
Yes.
What measures are those?
When I am at a board meeting, I am on leave. I am not there as a federal employee. I am not there in any other capacity than as a citizen of the state. Secondly, as I did before on the board, in order to avoid the appearance of a conflict of interest, which, by the way, the issue never arose during my previous term. I had the exact same position then as I have now. I served 3 years on the board, and really the issue of conflict of interest as a federal employee did not come up during that time. I realize now things are a bit different. But anyway, as I did then, on specific regulation proposals that pertain, for example, to the Tongass Forest, I have agreed to abstain from deliberations and votes on those proposals in order to avoid a conflict of interest. You know, we have tried to be sensitive to the fact that I am a federal employee. I might point out that my role as a federal employee is entirely in research. It has nothing to do with policy or management in any regard, and that the structure of the Forest Service clearly separates research from policy and management. And my boss is not the regional supervisor or not the regional forester. I work for a different organization entirely of the Forest Service, which is headquartered in Portland, Oregon.
Follow up?
Yes, Representative Ogden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're right, you had the same position, and there are quite a bit different circumstances. We have the federal government literally threatening to take over potentially, if not all, a significant portion of management, not only in federal land, in navigable waters, and private and state land. And you say that you don't vote when there's conflicts with those issues. Is that correct?
No, I don't. I have offered to abstain on specific proposals that pertain, for example, to the Tongass National Forest, where it might be perceived that I, as a Forest Service employee, might have a conflict of interest in dealing with those.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Ogden.
Well, based on that, I would ascertain that it would basically render you ineffective to vote in, say, the state's interest if there's a conflict between the state and federal management because of your conflict. You would have to abstain from voting on that, and it would weaken the state's position.
Representative, you know, in my previous term, I think I recall abstaining on that same basis maybe three or four times during the three-year appointment. And I really think that your fears of having me on the game board somehow advancing a federal takeover agenda are really unwarranted. My personal philosophy is not to do that, and as I indicated in the House State Affairs Committee hearing, even if I wish to do it, I don't even know what the federal agenda is, to be honest with you. As far as I know, with regard to subsistence management of wildlife resources, the federal government would like to get out of it. Their budgetary situation is limited, and I believe their official and public policy on it is to turn it back to the state if and when the legalities are resolved. And the game board isn't going to resolve those legalities one way or the other. I guess it's up to the legislature and the Congress and the courts to try to resolve that. So as a game board member, to be honest with you, I feel powerless, even if I had some hidden agenda to advance the federal philosophy, whatever that is. I feel powerless as one member of a seven-member board to be able to do that.
Mr. Chairman.
Wrap up?
I'll wrap it up. I don't feel that it's necessarily advancing the federal agenda, and you're obviously a hunter. You're interested in game issues. You're well qualified because of your background, and I guess the problem that I perceive is that if you're hamstrung by opting out because of a conflict, that you won't, and if and when, I think it's a matter of if, not when. No, it's a matter of when, not if, we get into a conflict over who's going to manage this particular piece of ground here as federal expansionism keeps going in Alaska, that you'll have to opt out, and you won't possibly have the state's agenda in mind or state's best interest. So if you'd like to respond to that, that's the end of my questions.
Well, again, I recall abstaining from three or four specific proposals during my last term that were specifically related to Forest Service issues on the Tongass, and I didn't want to get into an apparent conflict of interest there. And I do not anticipate opting out of anything on a larger scope than that this time around.
Representative Davies.
Thank you. Well, just to follow up and clarify on that point, what I thought I heard you say was that as an employee of the Forest Service, you were concerned about apparent conflicts with respect to forestry issues, but that on game management issues that you didn't feel that you would have to abstain from voting. Did I understand that correctly?
Well, you know, all of the proposals before the board relate to wildlife management, to hunting or trapping regulations.
Then, so we get it clear. On larger issues that don't have a specificity with respect to the Tongass Forest?
I anticipate no real or apparent conflicts in those issues.
In wrap-up, I have one question, Doctor. If we are apparently still on an unsettled course as to who should have primacy of game and fish management, we've skirted around the 10th Amendment. We've talked about the navigable rivers or waterways, excuse me, and the ownership of the land itself. I was very impressed with your earlier response to my question. You feel that the state should actually have jurisdiction over all the lands within the state border. Would you go so far as to go on record saying that you would favor a resolution of the federal change of ANILCA rather than a constitutional change within the state, as the Lieutenant Governor is proposing?
No, again, I think you give the game board members a whole lot more power, maybe, than they actually... No,
I'm not asking for whether you think you can change things. I'm just asking for your personal view.
My personal view? I don't know, sir. I guess I would have to consider that carefully. I mean, you know, better minds than I for a long time have tried to deal with solving the subsistence dilemma. And what's happened from my perspective as a result of the court decisions and the failed attempts to solve it in the legislative bodies is that we are at where we're at today. And to be honest with you, I haven't. I don't consider myself to be a subsistence policy expert. I consider myself to be some sort of a lowly wildlife biologist that's interested in being on the board and contributing that kind of expertise. So I guess I would have to consider the ramifications of your question pretty carefully.
I think I read that then as not being a redneck wild advocate like I might be for the state having complete jurisdiction. This is going to be my concern, sir, is the fact that even though you're a lowly biological scientist, your discussion among the members of the board would be of quite a value. And if there is a thread there that maybe we should change the state's constitution to allow a subsistence preference, as opposed to maybe trying to get something changed on the federal level, your mood on that—that's certainly your prerogative. I just—and that's—I assume that's what you're saying. Then
I guess, sir, that my response to my best response that I could give you is this: that as a game board member, if confirmed, I am prepared to obey and follow and carry out to the best of my abilities the directions of the courts and the legislature and the Congress regarding subsistence, whatever it is. And I might add, I have the same position on another issue, which is the initiative on aerial hunting. I have played no role in that. I prefer to be neutral on that and let it go the way it will go, and then as a board member to act accordingly. I just feel very uncomfortable in these very large issues in coming forth with statements that one side or the other will be very, very unhappy with.
Well, I thank you for your candor. Are there any other questions? If not, I would entertain a motion to move this nominee out of committee.
So moved.
It has been moved. Is there any objection to moving Dr. Van Ballenberg's nomination out of committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
That brings us to the last confirmation, confirmationee. I don't think that's a word, but at any rate, Greg, and let's see, Roxicka? Huh? He told us a way to remember that. Thank you. You gave us a kind of an easy way to remember it, and I've already forgotten it in state affairs.
Rosicka.
Okay. Go through that thing again. What is it? Rock sick?
Rose with an itch and K-A on the end. That's you pick it. Is asking a question, so Rosicka. You're asking if the flower itches.
Thank you. Greg, would you... We have now that. That's Rosicka.
yeah, Mr. Chairman. I guess I feel I'll bring another perspective to the board. I have a pretty hefty background in dealing with the front lines and conflict and controversy when it comes to resource management issues. And I've heard you guys definitely go into the whole federal, state, and that situation. Prior to McDowell and all of that, the way that we've always worked between the villages and the management is that everybody's on board and working together, regardless of who has the who's in the driver's seat at the moment, and that's the way we've worked on a cooperative basis back. As far as 85, when we put together our goose management plan.